Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And now it's time for some Twin Cities culinary talk with two foodies. One actually knows what they're talking about. The other just does it to be pretentious.
What is the soup du jour?
It's the soup of the day.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Bringing her expert opinion, it's Minneapolis St. Paul food critic, Dara.
No Chad Hartman today. He is off because of Twins baseball, but we figured the unfortunate side of having the Twins on WCCO on a day game on a Thursday means no Dara in studio. And I know how much people love when you come in.
Who wouldn't? I bring it all. You, I am sassy and informed and compassionate. I got it all.
You do got it all. And I know it's been a busy week, so let's just jump right into it. What do you want to start off with?
All right. So we're doing things differently. I think let's do a little behind the scenes slowdown, right? We'll get a little slow jam on what it's really like to be me. Here's what I did all weekend. I did that WCR conference. This is the Women Chefs and Restaurateurs. Now, I talked about this a couple times on Chad's show. I was kind of in the background of a lot of this. All right, so this is the biggest, I think it's the biggest female networking event in the country and for people in food. And so it's been complicated, right? Because you think there's a lot of women in food and this would not be a necessary thing. You think we're in this like post-equality universe, but we are not. So the numbers about food in food are a little odd. So a lot of people, there are a lot of women in food, but in terms of head chefs, it's really a vanishingly small number. Only 6% of restaurants are headed by women, and about 20% have female ownership. And it starts to be a number that's hard to talk about because in the country, about 10% of the economy at this point is restaurants. And you think, that's enormous. That's huge. But it's somehow big and yet also small because a lot of people, you know, don't meet each other. There isn't necessarily movement through the professions, all this kind of stuff. So we had a lot of panels. Some of the panels were like getting to know beer and cheese. And some of the panels were deep digs into how to manage a business. And then there was a lot of parties and networking around the edge. I put a blog up at mspmag.com with sort of my first thoughts. And my first thoughts were that even though I've been doing this for 20 years at this point, I didn't actually know how many people identify as a woman in food. I think the most astonishing person I met was an appellate trial attorney. So what does that mean? So someone who after, you know, the first round of things wash out with the clients and the judges and you go to the appeals court, they bring in the big guns. That's the appellate attorney. So an appellate attorney in employment law, and I wouldn't have thought like an appellate attorney in employment law is a woman in food. But yes, that's how she identifies. She wants to network with women in food. She does law work for different women in food, and that's who she is. And then I was meeting, you know, executives at big companies like General Mills and Land O'Lakes, marketing people, branding agency heads. That's another person you don't think like, oh, I work at a branding agency. I'm a woman in food. Just, you know, and as well as, of course, chefs and managers and restaurant owners. And then a lot of people on the sides of that, restaurant designers. So even like it was kind of, you think you've been doing something for a really long time. And then you don't think, like, I'm going to have my industry redefined this weekend. But that's kind of what happened.
Well, and I have to imagine there's a lot of people who have a day job something they identify. You know, for me, a radio producer. When I was in the newsroom, I was a reporter, but I also had a side job as a server and a bartender in a restaurant. So I'm sure there's a lot of people that, where there is that crossover.
Yeah, those people I kind of expected, you know, those people were not there, because if you identify as a reporter and you're just making money as a bartender, you don't have any desire to network with people in that. But the people that I didn't expect were like landscape architects who have a specialty in restaurants. Yeah, so obviously those people are making their living in restaurant adjacent spaces, but I just never thought of them before, and it was good to think of them.
Any other takeaways from your weekend? I know you wrote a lot about it, but...
I did write a lot about it. The other weird takeaway was that I have gone into a lot of these events over the last 5 years with a kind of journalist hat on and this idea that I'm supposed to be occupying tons of social media space. And it's very difficult. I find it's very difficult to be present and listening and paying attention and also tweeting and marketing and doing all those things. And so this weekend, I kind of made the choice, like, I'm just going to be in these spaces and I'm not going to be live tweeting the whole thing. And it made me much less stressed out. I didn't have as much work product at the end of it. But I think it was a good decision, and I think I'm going to live tweet fewer things.
It is the challenge in today's society. I went to a food event this last weekend, and it was, do I try everything, write about it in the moment, or do I tweet about it in the moment? And I chose to be present in that moment and then deal with all the other stuff on the side. But it is kind of, you know, it's you have to pick one or the other.
You do. I know very few people that can do both of this at the same time really well. The master of it all is Jason DeRusha. I don't know how that guy does it, but he will just look you in the eye, be fully present, and be sending a tweet about something else entirely different. It's like a weird one-man band skill. And I think you either have it, you can either be the guy who's like drumming and playing accordion at the same time, or you just can't. And I think that he's just got that little skill set.
Pick your battles. This one I saw when you sent along the stories, and I want to talk about it because you said the number one complaint about restaurants is that they're always too loud. And of course now, in 2018, there's an app for that.
There's a bunch. Yeah, so you can get on your phone an app and then do a spot noise meter reading, and then you can tweet out, like, this place is terrible. It's 80 decibels. And that feels good. It feels good that we have the power to do that. The noise in restaurants issue is so enormous and intractable because here's the problem. We don't like quiet restaurants. When restaurants open and they are very quiet, we hate them and we don't want to go there and it feels uncomfortable. Think about, you know, something that's really quiet, like a church. You feel that you have to be, if you're alone in a church, are you laughing because you haven't been to church in a while?
My mother's probably listening, so I will ignore that one. No, but it's true. You feel like you have to behave in a certain way.
You have to behave. You have to lower your voice. You kind of can't let loose with a joke. You can't. You're worried that people can overhear you because you're the only noise. So we hate quiet spaces. And so restaurants know that, and that's why they pump up the jams and they get everything buzzing and they don't like it to be. But then once you take this kind of jazzy, pumped up space and you put 300 people in it, you're shouting. It's miserable. It's the number one thing that people hate. I mean, people complain about it all the time. There have been different articles written about this lately, about this, you know, sound designers who work with restaurants and people that abate sound. And, you know, money is so tight that a lot of things that people used to do, remember when restaurants had ceilings, you would go in and there would be a flat surface above your head? It's not like that anymore. Now everything is exposed, open, HVAC and weird wires. All that stuff is noisy. So so much money has been sucked out of so many systems that things are de facto louder. It's complicated.
It's funny that this is on your list because I was in Brooklyn this last weekend and it was my first moment of, oh my goodness, I'm getting older and I'm becoming my parents, because every restaurant we went into, I mean, it would be like 7 at night, you know, 7, 8 at night. They eat a little bit later. So it's, you know, edging on the time of, you know, it's getting dark outside, blaring music. And every single one we walked into, I said, I can't do this. I'm hard of hearing already. I'm a loud person. It's going to be miserable. And so the one place we found that was quiet, that's where we picked. Quieter, you know, on Brooklyn scales.
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, the very hip hop restaurants in Minneapolis are loud, and some of them, I mean, the Brew Hall at Surly, I mean, that's, you know, you may as well be on an industrial machining floor. It can get so loud in there, but
and
people like it.
The open kitchens play a role in that too.
The open kitchens play a role in it. The design trends play a role in it. Remember when we used to enjoy tablecloths? Now everyone thinks like tablecloths are too fussy. I can't possibly. Well, that's something that used to absorb sound. So we have it. It's kind of interesting because they have these two diametrically opposed trends that people want quiet, and every single thing we do is opposite that. We want the buzzy place. We'll only go there. We don't want tablecloths. We don't want things to be expensive. So we don't want the restaurants to spend money on ceilings and drop tiles and things like that. So we say we want quiet. Every action we take is the opposite.
Big closings for Subway coming up.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. Subway is closing 500 U.S. stores. They are also opening 1,000 globally. But Subway is, I think, it's between a rock and a hard place, because people have been getting the message for a long time. The highly processed food is not good for you. Sodas are not good for you. And a lot of people have been avoiding those foods. So McDonald's, we haven't talked about this, but do you remember when McDonald's was in crisis? They're in crisis. And then 2015, they started pulling themselves out of the crisis. I knew that they had turned themselves around, that everything was fine. I looked up today, their stock price has gone up 62% since then. I mean, it is a big bump back in the right direction. So here are the things they did. They expanded the dollar menu. So there's now a bunch of $1, $2, $3, a lot of things on the dollar menu. They expanded breakfast. People wanted breakfast all day. They decided to do that. So they expanded their menu in interesting ways. They also increased quality. So now you can get fresh beef in the quarter pounder and fruit in your Happy Meals. So they did what kind of seems like the impossible, right? They did the two things at the same time. They made a greater selection, they lowered costs, and they increased quality. And that's, you know, you kind of think it's that, you know, cheap, fast, good, pick two. Like, you can't do all of those things. But they decided to go cheap, good, and fast, and they got all three. And that's what they turned themselves around with. Can Subway do that? I don't know, because where is the opportunity in the Subway, you know, kind of this very puffy bread and highly processed lunch meats? Is there a space in there for higher quality? I'm really not sure. So I think Subway sort of built the perfect cheap thing, and now how do you unbuild it like that? So they're up against a tough thing.
Well, and it's interesting, a restaurant like Subway that is in so many small towns. You know, where I'm from, Subway was one of the first fast food places that we had. And to this day, it's Subway, McDonald's, and Dairy Queen. So a lot of small towns, it's one of the only options. But I know.
Well, part of the reason that Subway is the biggest chain in the world, much bigger than everything, is because they have this model that they can go into small spaces. So you're a Subway franchise. You have a closet. You have a gas station. You have a giant empty space. You can get the Subway space to go in there. Like, McDonald's can't go into a gas station
because of the cooking space they need.
The cooking space they need, and just the model doesn't allow for it. But if Subway, you know, you give them 6 feet and some under-the-counter fridges, like, they can put a Subway in there.
That's really interesting. I hadn't thought of it from that term or that area before.
Yeah, that's what Subway, that was the thing. They cracked the code on a couple things. So shelf-stable foods, they have a lot of, you know, like the cold cuts. You don't need to sell all your cold cuts on Monday and toss them. Like, they're they're pretty sturdy. And then the way that you can bake bread to order, that's also, so you start with, I think it's frozen, I'm not sure, frozen, refrigerated, something, but you can kind of make the amount of bread to fit your community's needs. So if you have a quiet Monday in a small town, maybe you only need 30 loaves of bread. But if you're, you know, bumping in the city, maybe you need 3,000.
I want to get a preview of Saturday's show, but before we get to that, what is happening with pancakes?
I think this is another space that is just, you know, the internet has changed everything, right? I was reading some articles over the weekend that were like, without Facebook, there is no Donald Trump. And it's like, that's interesting. It's changed a lot. And all we don't have time and space to assess all of the changes that have come in every corner of the universe, right? I mean, so if I am, if my kid is sick at this point, the teacher texts me. You know, that was, think about what it was like in 1970. If your kid got sick, you know, they had to go to the nurse had to decide whether to phone somebody, you know, like it was all of these layers. Like now it's immediate. And I just bring that up as the pace of technological change has been so extreme and happened in every single aspect of society that we kind of can't track it, right? And so Instagram food, we've talked about that. There's just, you know, constantly some trend on Instagram. Like now it's avocado toast. Now it's mermaid oatmeal or whatever it is. And we've talked a lot about it.
Glitter in the beer.
Glitter. It's always glitter because glitter looks good in pictures. But one of the things that has happened is that the speed of communication from the Gwyneth Paltrows of the world to the, you know, you and me's of the world has gone up exponentially, right? It used to be like Gwyneth Paltrow had eaten some wacky toast and then she'd run into a magazine editor and they'd talk about it and then the magazine editor would float it by some other people. Then they go take a picture. Then it was in the magazine. You know, like it's a 6-month cycle before you or I learned like, oh, Gwyneth Paltrow ate some weird toast. But now it's instant. She wakes up in the morning, somebody puts some seaweed and avocado on a piece of unprocessed horse biscuit or whatever, and she puts it on the internet, and then here we are. Well, we've had all of these trends go through, and yet at the same time, backlash. People don't want to have these ridiculous standards in front of them all the time. Like you and I are just, you know, we're working gals, we're doing our things. We don't have time to have a personal, well, we don't have the cash for a personal chef or the time to, you know, tinker around putting avocados and kelp on everything. And so there's this, you know, for every Gwyneth Paltrow doing something crazy healthy, there is now somebody in response who's like, I'm a rebel because I'm eating pancakes and leave me alone. So there's this pancakes for the table meme that I wasn't aware of. So pancakes for the table means you go to brunch with a bunch of people. Nobody wants to order pancakes because it feels too like decadent and unhealthy.
Naughty.
Naughty.
It's naughty.
It's naughty. Also, it just, you know, it does get like whoever finishes the giant stack of pancakes, like you get somewhat into it. Then you kind of are done with I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But, you know, there's a lot of pancakes on a giant plate of pancakes. So you get pancakes for the table and that kind of diffuses the anxiety anyway. So there's this piece in Eater.com. And it was all about how there are food trends and food fetishes. So food trends are all things we know. It's like avocado toast all of a sudden. Food fetishes are the backlash, basically, where people are like, I love pancakes and I speak truth to your power, Gwyneth. And that is what is happening with pancakes. I think this isn't an issue about taking sides or, you know, pancakes are up, pancakes are down. Pancakes are always up. I think the what's interesting about it is how much is roiling around and how little of it any of us can keep track of at this point. I mean, I didn't know about that either. I'm in this space all the time. I had no idea that there's a big cultural war, or not war, but like this back and forth. And it's all very interesting because I forget how much in the grip of technological change we are at every minute. I was writing a check for my kids' field trip checks, and my kids were like, how often do you go through these checkbooks? They're just looking at this thing. It's like, well, we used to go through a lot of checks, but now things happen more with credit cards. And my kids are just looking at me like, what are you even talking about, lady? Like, why, what are, you know, what is a universe without credit cards? Like, how is that possible? Because for them, you know, they probably see credit cards more than they see wildlife.
Or cash, for that matter.
Or cash, or anything. Like, they collect cash for the ice cream truck. The ice cream truck is the guy that takes cash, you know?
Yep. No, it's interesting. A friend of mine is a teacher, and we always compare the things that we were taught in school versus what's been taken out of the curriculum. And there was an entire section on how to write a check, how to balance a check ledger. And do they do that anymore?
I don't know, but they do. They still do all the things about change. I can report that in the third and fourth grade, they've, you know, figure out money and dimes and nickels and all of those things, which they need to do, and I'm glad about it. But, you know, just even hopping on Instagram and seeing how, like, you know, I think that if you had told somebody 20 years ago, like, oh, there's going to be a future in which, like, a revanchist army is upholding the values of pancakes against the scolding glitterati who are trying to get us to eat, you know, salmon and avocados and acai seeds or whatever for breakfast. Who would have believed it? But it's all because of technology. It's all because of that lightning fast transmission of trends and ideas all the time.
I'm going to put you on the spot before we get to Saturday's show, just because of the weather realm we're in right now. It's beautiful outside. People want to be outside after the terrible winter we have. Give me a couple recommendations on patios or rooftops people should check out as these places start opening them up.
Well, let's see. The thing about patios on the early season, you need to have this huge staff to make a real patio happen. So your best bet on the early season is to think about the places that can just open their garage doors, so Smack Shack, or the places that are just ready for this, like Sea Salt, the place that's in the park by Hiawatha Falls. They are just ready. Sandcastle's another one. Brasa, those two locations, the one in St. Paul and the one in Minneapolis, they also have those big garage doors. St. Genevieve has these big, I don't know what you call them, but they're doors that kind of pivot. They're not exactly French doors, and they're not, but the whole door itself just kind of pivot open, and all of a sudden you're outside. So those are some good places to go.
What's on Saturday's show?
We have a book author, Feast by Firelight. And this is, another technology backlash. Lot of books right now that are about cooking on fires, either camping in your backyard as a bonfire, not so much like just standard barbecue or grill books, but a lot of like build a big pile of wood, set it on fire, and then gather people around it and cook. I think people are yearning for those big events that you unplug for. So you go in the woods and you don't stare at your phone, you stare at a fire. I just picture some grandma listening to us just like, what did these kids do with this wonderful society? We handed them everything they needed. They had, you know, cars and houses, and then they just took it all and just made a disaster where they can't ever unplug from their phones.
We threw it away for smartphones.
I mean, really, would it be better if we went back? Like, these are the mysteries.
I was with a bunch of old friends this past weekend, and we were talking about, like, playing night games as kids. You'd go around everyone's door right after dinner and who's going to play tonight? And we'd be outside till 10:30, 11, you know, and all the parents would start calling. And like, does that happen anymore?
Yes, I can report
it does.
My city block in Minneapolis that everybody.
Can I come play?
Yes, they go from the alley to the, you know, they know the path to get from Claire's house to Eli's house. And, you know, then they go up to the park. And now my kids are big enough that they can cross the street. So that's added a whole level of freedom. And let's see, is this, my little one is not going to podcast. Okay, she doesn't listen to podcasts, I remember. So I can tell you. Oh, I just got her birthday present. Her birthday is this weekend. I stopped on the way into work at Patina. Thank you, Patina. And they have these little kites. They're like 4 inches across, glittery, glittery kites that are butterflies. And so I got her 4 of these for her birthday. They're like $3.95 each or something. They are so cute. And so all the neighborhood girls, I counted up like how many there are. And they're all, and my vision is that they're all going to take these tiny, glittery butterfly kites up to the park. And they're going to actually fly kites. No screens.
Someone's got to document it for social media so we can see it, yeah, though.
But then it would be me, and I would be the person poisoning the perfect thing that I built.
Well, that sounds perfect. How can people reach you if they want to connect with you either on social media or through MSP Meg?
You can find me on my Twitter. I am at Dear Dara. You can find me on Facebook. I am Dara.Grumdahl. And you can find me on Instagram, too. I'm Dara Moskowitz-Grumdahl because somebody grabbed all my other things that I use. You believe it? So annoying.
Well, you will be back regular time next Thursday. Chad is gone. I'm not sure who's filling in yet, but you'll be here every Thursday at 2:35.
Forever.
Forever.
Till they pry this microphone out of the thin air. I'm not holding it.
Thanks, Dara.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.